Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Slap away at it on the wall. It's taken back by Yoki Haryus. He got it across ice. Cousins shot right under the score! Casey at the back. Casey Middlestad hammers it home. And Buffalo wins it.
In overtime.
The great, unforgettable, unmistakable Rick Jeanneret. His final call as a Sabre, of course, and here as we sit on August 16th, we're a day removed from RJ's passing a year ago at this time, Marty. So it's, I know we mentioned it not that long ago, where it's still very hard to put into context. For me, just like it feels like yesterday, but it also feels like a long, long, long time ago. I don't know quite how to put it into words, but it's important that we do so before heading into the weekend when tomorrow marks the anniversary of such a great loss.
Yeah, and yesterday I got hit with so many pictures and comments on social media. Thank you for all the birthday wishes, but a lot of the pictures were from this past season. People like, oh, we got to meet you, this, that, the other thing. And I when I played, I could tell what season the picture that was on the hockey card or I was signing was from because of the equipment I wore. A little change in the pads, a little change in the glove, a little change in the mask, whatnot. Different teams. You're like, oh, this one's from 03, 04, you know, 01, 02, whatnot. And what stood out to me yesterday was that, well, from the difference times the picture was being used or not, but the RJ pin that we were all season long last year. So I was like, oh, that's from, you know, this season, this past season, you know, RJ missing him wearing the pin. And yeah, so that's definitely one of those seasons, I think, that when I look back to fan interactions, a lot of questions about RJ, what was he like? A lot of we miss him, a lot of all of that. And what I keep telling people most importantly is that we all miss the legendary announcer that he was. But I know that it's going to be a year tomorrow and there's nobody that misses him more than his family, because he was a great grandfather, a great father, a great husband, a great, you know, family member, and cared a lot about everybody that was in his circle. So, yeah, it was a tough day last year, a year ago tomorrow, but we remember the great things about him.
We certainly do. And the calls live on forever, as does the banner in the rafters. And I feel like, I mean, this is unique because you're talking about a one of one, right? Like, yeah, it's RJ. So I get it. It's different. But I just feel like, and I know, you know, you've got your little places that you go to either locally or maybe in the bigger context of Western New York, what I have found, and whether it just instinctively comes to you because we were all fans of his or whatnot, but even in the most unlikely places, I'll say, I will be sitting somewhere, look up, and there will be like the RJ banner or, yep, the RJ Way mini street sign. Mm-hmm. And I think that has again reinforced just how adored he was, but by more people than you could have ever imagined. Like, you know what I'm getting at here. Like, I go to punk rock clubs and whatever, 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 right? And it's just, my eyes always seem to find it. And I just think that it's a pretty incredible two really incredible keepsakes to keep his name very much in initials on display, if you will.
Look, I have my RJ Way sign on the desk, not far from me, the banner, because I change things around. And I'm like, how do I incorporate those again in my set next year to make sure that it is on display? Yes, there is going to be constant reminder of the impact that RJ has had on many of us here in Southern Ontario, Western New York, but in the hockey world and around the world. Like, you'll be, you know, Sabres are going to, you know, Germany and Czechia this, you know, at the start of the season. I can tell you that Sabres fans in Germany and Czechia are going to want to talk to some of the people around the organization, the players, about, hey, you know, what was, because maybe they heard his voice, maybe they heard his passion, maybe they've seen him on TV, but they maybe never got a chance to meet him or, say hello, like a lot of people here at the arena have had a chance to do. So that's incredible. And this, more and more stories come out that I'm like, I didn't know that about RJ. I was at Seneca Niagara Casino a week ago doing that slot machine tournament. And a lot of people from Fort Erie, Niagara Falls came over and were part of that event. And they're like asking, they're talking about RJ and like, oh, we used to go to his bar. He used to have a bar and I had no idea. I'm like, I think I may have heard, was that?
Clancy's.
Yeah, Clancy's there. And I think I heard that before, but it's not in the memory bank, it's low. But then you got to talk. I'm asking them, oh, what was that like? And I learned more about a part of his life and his imprint on, the bigger than life character that he was, because people would go there because they knew it was RJ's place.
And what did the Knox family respect the most upon entry into the NHL? And then I think it's fair to say RJ carried this same respect and reverence when it comes to another team. Was the Montreal Canadiens.
Montreal Canadiens,
right?
Yep.
And that's why their greats were here for the first ever game at the Odd in the inaugural season. And if ever RJ was pressed in any interview, in any situation about life on the road, it almost always came back to Montreal.
Yes.
And here we are talking about RJ and our team of the day, alphabetically.
Just so happened.
It's Montreal. Honestly, it's amazing. It's amazing and fitting. And yeah.
There's a great picture up on the press box where RJ must have walked by that picture 1,000 times.
Times
right?
As five.
You come out of the elevator on the left side, there's a picture of the very first ceremonial puck drop, the inaugural season, and Seymour's, there's Jean Béliveau. And was it Floyd Smith, the captain of Sabres?
I'm blanking on the picture, but it might have been Jeremy Hinn too.
I don't know if that was him or not, but I know that because the reason I know is Jean Béliveau is because the number is on his skates, on his gloves, on the back of his jersey, and then Seymour's dropping the puck like he's just spinning it. Like he was so excited to get it going, so he just, boom, he dropped the puck down. And, to know that RJ had been part of the Sabres from the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, man, like he was there for that. He was there for many more. Like you walk along the press box and all these pictures and you're like, RJ was there for every one of those moments.
Yeah, it should be Floyd if the picture, is the one you're talking about. And Jerry, of course, was captain after that. And you remember one of the more recent road crews that we attended? In Carolina, with RJ. You remember when people brought, there were some people that had photos from like one of the early Sabre trips into Montreal?
Yes.
They were like Polaroids, and it was like they had met RJ and other Sabres like in the, the bowels of the arena at the Forum. And I was like, this is wild. Like just, and of course, RJ, as he always does, can connect the dots and tell a story about it. And it was just like, hey, I can't believe this person has these pictures. And that 50 years later, they're getting the opportunity to actually stand there and show RJ and talk to him about it. But just an encyclopedia of experience.
Yeah.
Right? That's what he always was able to share. So.
Yeah, and RJ was one of those that you could also talk to him and ask him questions about anything, and he would talk about the passion that he had, a little bit like Walter Gretzky. Like Walter Gretzky would invite people to his house and say, hey, come on in, I'll show you the stuff. Like RJ had that in his beautiful mind that just was able to basically paint a picture of what he was what he had experienced and see mm-hmm. and felt in that moment. So that to me was the gift that he had with the fans, because he would always let him in to the inner circle that of his experience.
Well, to Sandra and the entire family, we are always thinking about you, and especially so here on this first anniversary tomorrow of RJ's passing. The team of the day, as we mentioned, is Montreal, a place where RJ loved to go. Everybody loved it for the history of the game, for the city itself. This Montreal Canadiens team, you know, and probably got tired of me thinking this way last year.
I know where you're going.
I kept saying last year that I expected Montreal to be better and Ottawa to be better, and even the other teams that didn't make it, like the Columbus and Philadelphia's of the world. Philadelphia ended up being way better yeah. than a lot of people expected. But even Montreal right now, Marty, three straight last place finishes in the division has yep. gone from 56 to 68 to 76 under Marty yep. St. Louis. And if they make the same type of jump and get to the mid-80s, which I think they will, the waters get muddied even more when it comes to the push for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. And this obviously has a direct impact on the Sabres.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, look, Florida won the division with 110. Boston was second with 109. When you look at the year prior to that, Boston at 135, Toronto 111. So there's less points at the top and there's more points at the bottom, and it squeezes the whole division together. So you're right. The Montreal Canadiens last year, I thought they were going to be bad. And I don't want to put words, but I think you kept telling me they're not that bad. Like, you're like, they're a good team. They're not mm-hmm. that bad. Everybody's got them last and in the Eastern Conference or in the division. And well, they mm-hmm. didn't finish last in the Eastern Conference. And they were, well, technically six games under 500, mm-hmm. but they had 16 overtime and shootout losses, 16 of them. Mm-hmm. If they, instead of losing 16 of them, win six, which 10 overtime or shootout loss would still have been a big number, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden they're 36, 36, and 10. They're 82 points. Like, that is a big number. If you just shave off some of the extra, like, they used to go to overtime all the time. And a lot of those overtimes where they were winning, giving up a goal in last minute. They were winning, giving up a goal in last minute, then losing in OT. That's mm-hmm. what Montreal did last year. That's why they were at 76. They could have easily been at 82. And all of a sudden now, if they were 82 last year and they're improving this year, they're 88, 90 this year if they continue on that sense.
Yeah, so close
games.
They
didn't have Kirby Dach for most of the season, which yeah. is a huge part of their team.
Well, it could be, and I think that remains yeah. to be seen. So in Kirby's fully healthy year the year prior, or close to, you know, he was trending, he only played 58 games, he was trending towards 50 points.
Yep.
Alex Newhook, same thing. His season got ended prematurely, not like Dach, who played only two games.
Yep.
But Newhook was also a projected 50-plus point player based on how he was doing. Mm-hmm. When you marry that with Suzuki, career year, yep. goals and points, Caulfield, career year for points, Slavkovsky, career year for points, granted very young in his career,
And a great second half for Slavkovsky.
Yes.
He started slow and really turned it on second half. So use the second half numbers and project it over. It's even better than the right. 20 goals and 50 points.
But also an almost unrealistic number posted on the blue line by Mike Matheson,
yes.
who was in the top 10 in defense scoring after almost doubling his career high in points. He ends up with 62, but he was dash 24, which speaks to a bigger problem and the underlying numbers, which is Montreal wasn't really that good. Like, their power play wasn't great. Their penalty kill wasn't very good. They gave up a lot of shots. And I think their goaltending was inconsistent. You tended to see more optimism within their netminders. We certainly saw some of the best of Caden Primo in head-to-head time against the Sabres. But again, that's a very small sample. So I'm sitting here trying to paint both sides of the fence. I've got an airbrush going everywhere here. Yeah. Like, they're okay, but I'm still not sure they're great. but do you have to be great to get into the playoffs? Is it just going to be this muddy waters, 7-8 Eastern Conference teams where the bar gets even lower and you get in with 86 as opposed to like the 91? Like, I don't know. But
they got a problem. They're okay when you focus on the right pieces. Mm-hmm. You focus on Slafkovský, Suzuki, Caulfield, Newhook, Doc, Matheson, Caden Gooley, Lane Hutson, who should impact like the blue line in a good way.
Do you think Hudson's going to make it?
I think Hudson's going to make it. Yes, wow. I think he's going to.
They will be. Actually, even, what an incredibly young blue line then.
Incredibly young blue line between Gooley, Hudson, Harris, Barron, Jack Eye. Like, it's very young. Mm-hmm. But they do have Madison and Savard that balances it out. And if you put Hudson with a David Savard, you know, you can really surround Hudson with a veteran presence, leadership, a defensive guy that will make up for some of the maybe the offense that Hudson is going to try to push along the way. I think Hudson, but you look at those guys, you focus on them. That's great. I think Montreal is good. Slafkovský had 35 points in his last 40 games, 16 goals, 16 of his 20 goals happened in the last 40 games. Mm-hmm. Turn that into a 30 plus goal season. Mm-hmm. And a.
My button.
Yeah. I got too excited about Slafkovský and I hit my microphone button. That's what happens when I get excited. But you turn that into a 70-point and 30-plus goals? Like, that's pretty impressive for a guy
pretty
that we're like, after
pretty automatic won, now, isn't it, for him? Good. Don't you think?
I think he can do it.
Yeah, of course he can.
He can definitely do it. But the problem that Montreal has is, okay, what do you do with Brendan Gallagher? What do you do with Josh
Anderson?
Suck it up.
Yeah, suck it up. I mean,
they have to play top six or top 9 minutes. Yeah. Probably top nine. They're very past that group of players that I am kind of like, oh, Montreal's on the good path. Mm-hmm. There's some very big question marks.
I still feel like though they're in the window where they can live with those players on those contracts, which with inflation now has turned those contracts into just afterthoughts, right? Like, yeah. It's not huge money. Like, Gallagher's maybe a little excessive being over $6 million, but he's also been really good. And we're certainly not, I'm not going to throw a stone inside the Gallagher glass house because all he does is torment the Sabres. Like, he still scores at a ridiculous pace against this.
He beat me. So he's been around a long time. So
he has, but he's only 32 allegedly. I feel like there's needed proof of the birth certificate here, but I don't know. Like, I just,
but they both. So Montreal this year, are they going to make the playoffs? No, I don't think so. But going the right direction? Yes. And I think what happens next season is Montreal buys out Gallagher and or Josh Anderson. Okay. With 2 years left of their contract, they probably are in a good place to buy him out. Like, really just say, okay, now we are opening that spot for somebody else. Now we're opening two spots for people that can really help us. And I think that's going to make a big difference in a year from now.
Well, and a year from now, they're also going to have an extra $4.2 million once the buyouts come off the books or salary retained in the form of Petrie and Jake Allen. So, like, they have that. You're
and
the way
Dvorak, this is his last year. Armia is his last year. That's another $7.5-8 million right there. Like, they are really, really squeezing their contracts that maybe are secondary, not as important, and moving in a different direction.
Yes, and even a year ago at the draft, they picked another young defenseman in David Reinbacher, fifth overall. Right, he's a right shot. Like, I look at this stable, and I know like they're unproven, but at the same time, they did get some crazy in-season experience. Remember when they came through Buffalo and were just decimated? And I think all six of them that dressed that night were like under 25.
Yeah.
But all were closer to 20 than 25.
Yeah, their defense was so young.
So anyway, I think that they will be dealing with a position of strength to then augment the forward group that you just spoke of that can look significantly different through attrition and potential buyouts in the next year. So
Reinbacher is going to be a player. He's going to be in Laval next year for a full season, which is going to be great. But the one that everybody's excited about, I think that's another player that's going to come in and take a roster spot that is Gallagher or Anderson or Dvorak or Armia right now, is Ivan Demidov, which the Canadians got fifth overall this year.
Again,
so their fifth pick this year, fifth pick last year, Slafkovský the year before. You're looking at it, you're like, whoa. Like, they have built a really nice little stable there of and the youth that they already have. I think it's going to be a team that look out in about 24 to 36 months.
But if they were, and being this is always so tricky. We talked about it with Chicago and Luke Richardson. Sometimes, you know, coaches just find themselves in that situation. Where there's an organizational approach, acceptance, it is what it is right now. And I feel like Marty St. Louis has kind of had to live with that. And I think we've seen him take a breath and be patient, right? Which is probably against how he played the game when he was a Hart Trophy winner. But do you see St. Louis as the long-term guy here, as this core ages into appropriate impact, and like any coach, can this goaltending actually make the coach look good enough to keep wanting to be the guy behind the bench?
So I'll answer the goaltending question first, because they had three goalies last year, that three goalie monster with Allen, Primo, and Montembeau. And it affected the, you know, the performance, the rhythm of those guys. They played well, but I think this will be interesting to see. So I'm not saying I will answer that question in 6 months, but I will defer to, I like Montembeau and I like Primo. Montembeau went to the World Championship, not this past tournament, the one before, and did really well. So much so that people are like, hey, he could be on the Canadian, you know, short list of goalies for 26 Olympics or the 24, 25 Six Nations face-off or whatnot. Primo, I was always...
it's four nations. I wish it was Six Nations.
Did I say Six Nations?
I think you did, or did I hear it wrong?
Yeah, the Four Nations.
I do have lacrosse on the brain right now, because the major series lacrosse final in Ontario is happening between Six Nations and Peterborough, and there's a slew of bandits on Six Nations. They went undefeated in the regular season. Now they're in the championship final, and they're down 0-2 to Peterborough. So
I've been thinking about that, too, because I was at the event at Seneca with a couple of Bandits alumni, so we're talking about all of it. But anyway.
Yeah.
Four Nations face-offs. Primo, I was never high on. He impressed me last year, but I still don't know if he's a, is he a backup? Is he a guy that you can elevate? I don't think Montreal has their question in net for who's going to be the guy that's going to be making an impact in the crease when they get to the playoffs. I don't know if that's Montembeau or Primo right now or somebody else. So I think there's a big question mark there. And the same is with Marty St. Louis. Marty St. Louis, I don't want to say I would compare him to a little bit of Don Granato when Don came into Buffalo. It was about, hey, let's make sure that we send these guys in the right direction and continue to build that. And then we got to a place in Buffalo where Kevin Adams is thinking, okay, now it's win, win, win. And it's not going the way that I would want to, despite the fact that Don has done a great job. We need to find somebody else. Marty St. Louis and the Canadians may find themselves in that same crossroad. The difference is that St. Louis has the relationship with Kent Hughes for a long, long time, being his agent and everything. So that relationship is thick. And in French, we say thick. It's very thick. So there you go. Like, I think Marty St. Louis will have a shot at taking this team into the playoffs and performing and trying to see what he can do because of the tight relationship between Kent Hughes and Marty St. Louis.
Can I rephrase the question, Your Honor, as it comes to goaltending?
Do you want me to give you the definition? Can you use it in a sentence? Is there pronunciations?
No, I just, this is unfair, but like, where does the Canadiens tandem rank among the 32 NHL teams?
Oh.
Their goalie tandem, not the coach and GM tandem.
Yeah, let me just change book here, because I remember I did a thing at the...
Marty's Sportsbook, live on the fly.
Live on the fly. So free agent frenzy here. I think I had to do a kind of list. Okay, ranking, because I was doing TSN on Free Agent Frenzy. So rank the Canadian team's goaltenders by their team, right? And I had Montreal sixth in Canada, just ahead of Calgary. With Wolf and Vladar, I say that's a big question mark. But Toronto, Edmonton, Ottawa, Winnipeg, and Vancouver were ahead of Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I look at Montreal right now, and I think they could be in the bottom seven or eight in the National Hockey League at first look. Could they be performing much better than that? Absolutely. But if I'm going to rank all the teams right now and look at face value, I would probably have Montreal between 22 and 27 in the league.
Okay.
With Montembeau and Primo.
Let's narrow it down in a different way. The teams in the Atlantic that have struggled to get to where they want to go. Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit, and Montreal.
Yeah. What's the key?
Who has the best tandem and who has the worst?
Well, I'm going to say that Ottawa with Linus Ullmark jumped ahead of everybody. And the way that Luukkonen played last year, second half, adding Reimer and Levi, having had a good season in Rochester and potentially even starting Rochester next year, I would put Buffalo number two. So I think Detroit would be three. And Detroit, I have no idea what they're doing, their goalies. Like,
three-man competition to start the year.
We talked about them when it was Detroit, the team of the day. So obviously it's what is Steve Yzerman doing with his goalies? But I have Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, and Montreal probably equal.
Yeah, interesting. Obviously, recent history shows that Montreal has played the Sabres tough. There have been so many one-goal games. So many have gone beyond regulation time.
But funny enough, I don't know that I put Toronto in the top four in their goalies going in with Wolf and Stolarz. Like, I think Ottawa is probably ahead of Toronto when you look at it that way.
I don't know. I like Stolarz a lot, and I liked Joe Wall as well. He just doesn't have a ton of experience, but I think they, I mean, if you
as a team, they'll overcome that because they're Toronto and they can score. But if you just look at the crease, I don't have Toronto in the top 40 Atlantic. I have Ottawa sliding in fourth, maybe, or even maybe.
That's strange because you like Stolarz.
I really like Stolarz, but Stolarz will play what, 35, and Wohl's going to play 55? Like that.
We don't know that.
There's still a big question mark, but I know that I have a Vezina winner in Ullmark that is in Ottawa, so that's the difference. But Montreal is second last or last in the Atlantic Division.
Do you think Shayna Goldman knows that you're on the show today? I feel like I've had the exclusive dynamic with Shayna on any days of the week for quite a while. Anyway, it is Friday, we're told. And Shayna Goldman is going to be coming up next. But before we get there, mini packs. Look, we're not that far away. We're less than 2 months from the home opener now. Mini packs allow you, the fan, to build a pack of five or more games and save. The ultimate flexibility, allowing you to enjoy great value while still seeing the matchups, the opponents that you want the most. Sabres.com/mini packs. Shayna Goldman is next on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rarely seen and heard together this offseason. It's Shayna Goldman with Marty Baron and yours truly here on Sabres Live. Shayna, we were welcoming not only you back to the show, but we were welcoming in Montreal as the team of the day today and exhaustively going through their roster before you came on. I don't mean to belabor the Montreal point, but I would love your opinion as to whether they can continue their gradual improvement from 55 to 68 to 76 to who knows what as far as points this year. How do you see Montreal?
Yeah, it's a slow and steady process. And I honestly respect the fact that they committed to it because they are not the team I really thought would. And I think they've done a really good job. And I think that they're taking the right steps because they're going to lean on their own guys, right? We're going to see Nick Suzuki continue to round into form. And he had an outstanding season. Cole Caulfield is adding a little more dimension. And then you have, you know, guys like Slafkovský breaking out. And that's really big. I am really interested to see how their net grows this year because that three-goalie system really hurt them. And you saw the second they traded Jake Allen, both Primo and Montembeau really bounce back. So I'm curious how much they can kind of lead the way and be their backbone to help push them forward this year.
So because it's August and in a month from now, training camps are opening and prospect challenges and all of it, one here in Buffalo. I'm seeing a lot of, here's your fantasy prediction for this upcoming season. I saw Juraj Slafkovský at 73 points for this upcoming season. Well, last year he had 50. 23 points increase would be a lot. But in the second half, he had 35 points in 40 games. I think that's what it was. So I'm thinking, hey, is 70 too much for Slafkovský? Is 73 the right number? Could it be 75 or plus?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it does feel like he's going to get that start on the top line. It's his place to lose. We know how good the three of them are together. 73 does feel a little rich at this point, but you know what? I could definitely see high 60s for sure, depending on how much power play opportunity he gets and how much their power play improves as well. You know, he's never going to be the star of, I feel like he's not the star of his line. He's not going to be this year, and that's okay. But I do feel like as long as he keeps progressively improving from where he left off, why not, right? I don't think he's going to be a point per game pace player, and that's totally fine. But the Canadiens are still a top heavy team that those three are going to be put out in the perfect situations every opportunity the coaches have. So it does bode well for him.
One thing I'll say about Slafkovský is in hindsight, but it definitely felt this way at the time, he had terrible luck early in the year. He, of all the Canadiens to me, found himself in the difference maker position and couldn't deliver. And then finally it all started to flip in the second half. So I think he does have a huge opportunity here to get.
I believe
well
he missed on a
70.
Wide open shootout, right? He had the
remember
move
that?
And he missed,
yeah.
And then the next time he scored. So it was one of those where it doesn't count to the record, but it was fitting. Like he missed wide open opportunities, but then he got him the second half.
Shayna, we have had amazing breakthrough news in the NHL since you last spoke to this show. Not one, but two offer sheets. How happy are you with this development?
Oh my God, it's about time. It happened. And like 5 minutes later, I got a note like, hey, you want to write about this? Like, yes, I do. This is a rare opportunity. Like, let's have some fun. Do I love the contracts that were offered, right? They have to be overpayments. And I think that we have to keep that in mind. The Holloway one, I think, of course, go for it. You could have pushed higher and I would have been like, hey, go for it. To me, Holloway was one of the best offer sheet candidates this summer. And I know we all think of the big name guys, right? Who's going to try for Lundell and try to pressure the Panthers? But sometimes you have to go for those mid-tier stars and just look for teams in tough situations like the Oilers are. It felt like this perfect opportunity. Now to double down and add a second one, adds another wrench into it that I love. I wouldn't have offered Broberg that deal. I know he doesn't have a ton of NHL experience. There's only so much to go off of. I think it's way over his market value, but it's so intriguing because you look at these two, and with Holloway, he's the player I would want to keep if I had to choose between them. And he has the favorable contract, right? But they just got these forward reinforcements from Arvidsson and Skinner and guys like that, right? For their middle six on defense. The plan was, it seems, for Broberg to be one of your starting six and to bring an element of puck moving that they don't have outside of that top pair. So how do you part with that when he has the worst contract? And I think that makes it all the more tricky for the Oilers to handle on a good day. Now throw in the fact that it's Dan Bowman, who I don't think handles cap management very well. And it just makes this entire situation so tough for them to navigate. And say they match both somehow, right? Now you just set yourself up to try to offer sheet Evan Bouchard next year, because they're going to be even more crunched for space. And that's exactly what you should be doing. Like, I feel like general managers, I hope this wakes them up and say, we're not friends because we didn't offer one, but two, to do everything we could to put the screws to you.
So the rest of the league's got to be happy, because if the Oilers are squeezed to retain, then they can look at next year and say, okay, we're going to start the talk with Bouchard early, trying to make that happen. Now,
and you can't have Bouchard talks without Draisaitl.
Yeah, well, exactly. Draisaitl is going to have to sign Bouchard, and then the year after is McDavid. There's $40 million cap space that you got to have for these three players that you're gonna need to find it. Word is out, you know, the rumor mill saying that, well, the Oilers have not decided yet if they're going to retain or let any of those guys walk. They have 7 days, but they're exploring Kulak and Cody Ceci trades, because those two together are about, what, like $7 million,
six, I think.
Six and some. Mm-hmm. Which one would you feel like is for a team to say, okay, like I suggested to Duffer, if I'm the Buffalo Sabres, I don't think I'm making that, but if I needed a right shot defenseman right now, I would say, okay, we'll take CC on a 1 year at 3.5. Give us a, you know, second round pick. We'll give you a fourth. There, I give you a favor. CC and a second for a fourth. I don't know if Edmonton does that, but is it CC? Is it Kulak? What do you see happening?
If I'm an opposing team, I want Kulak over CC 100%. And if I'm the Oilers, I'm doing everything to move out CC because your bottom four is either going to be a Nurse CC pairing, which you know doesn't work. Yeah. It got burned all in the regular season, and it got burned 10 times more in the postseason, especially when they threw them into tough minutes that they had no business taking on. Your other solution is splitting them up, and now you have deficiencies on both of your bottom four. So what do you want to do? I think if you're intent on keeping Broberg, and I see the case for that, I would want him with Kulak. That would be the pair to me that could be your second pair in Edmonton. Okay. So I would be doing everything to not lose him. If you can lose CeCe, you lose one of the weights that's been hurting you. And I know he doesn't, like, he's not very expensive and he has the reputation and all of that. And, you know, sometimes it gets overhyped. But when you see his game in those crucial moments, like we did in the postseason, I would have a very hard time holding on to him if I were the Oilers.
So what do you think happens? You think St. Louis gets both?
I was going to say, do they sign both? Did they sign one? Did they let them walk? It was going to be the same thing.
Okay. It's tough because Bowman is the monkey wrench in all of this. And I could see him trying to put his foot down and being like, I'm keeping both, which I don't know if is the move either. But I would keep Holloway every day of the week. That contract, he's going to be worth it in half a season, I would say, honestly. It's funny you see some of the reaction like, he's a bottom sixer. He's a young guy. And down the stretch and into the playoffs, he was very good. I think he could be a legit second liner. And then Skinner could be more comfortably on the third line, which is where I think he should be in that lineup. You have a second line of Holloway, Arvidsson, Draisaitl. Like, let them cook. I would love that for Edmonton. So I would sign Holloway. I would let Broberg walk. I know it's going to hurt. But I don't think he's a $4.5 million defenseman this year. And I think that is going to be a backbreaker next year.
And the compensation is a second round pick for Broberg. The Oilers don't have a first or a second rounder next year. They have one third, two fourths, I should say. So, I mean, getting a third rounder for Holloway or trying to recoup one of the second rounder that you don't have now may be the telltale sign there. I guess you guys talked about crazy goalie ideas last week when I wasn't on, like serving your own penalties. I did a little math yesterday. I had 81 penalty minutes. Ron Ekdal almost was a penalty minute per game type of goaltender. I think I would have enjoyed gone to the penalty bench once in a while, but it wasn't that often. Ron probably wouldn't have liked that. Who's your favorite goalie when you consider like somebody that has a little bit of flair? Like, we know that Binnington has flair. Like, he likes to get involved into it. But I can't say that he's like Ron Ekdal was. Like, he doesn't really back it up in the same way that Ron Ekdal would have, or Tom Barrasso, or Billy Smith, right?
No, but Binnington won a cup. Ekdal didn't.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Ekdal got there twice, and I think they got swept both times with the
Flyers. No, seven-game loss when he got the Conn Smythe.
That's right, yeah. Then swept by Detroit that year. So, but who's the one goalie you think has that Billy Smith, Ron Ekdal kind of trigger that now could serve his own penalties?
I mean, Binnington's the easy answer for yes. Sure. Like, what goaltender gets as angry as he does? Besides him, like, it's so tough. Georgiev, I could see. Georgiev's
that's
fiery.
One of them too. Like, I could see Georgiev losing his mind a little bit.
Yeah, Marty, he brings that fire.
Don't you remember? I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure we can here in 2 seconds. Didn't Luukkonen lead all goalies in penalty minutes last year?
Last season? I got it here right now. No, he was fifth with 8. You know, yeah. You know who lost his mind a couple of times last year also is John Gibson. He had 12. And Peter Mrazek at 14 penalty minutes last year was the most pims for a goaltender. But
like, it's embarrassingly low for the fraternity. Like, yes. Somebody needs to get emotional once in a while.
14 penalty minutes.
And Gibson, who could blame the man? If you were playing behind that defense for as many years as him, I would be, like, turning around and throwing my net. I would be the saltiest of goal. I could never be a goaltender because I could never keep my cool. I would be taking penalties. I'd be swiping people on the shins. I would be talking, saying terrible things. And if I was allowing goals, I would not be good. I threw my tennis racket like eight times today.
Let's pay attention to this guy next year, Pyotr Kuchetkov. He seems to have a short fuse as well. And he didn't play as many games as the top guys last year, only playing 42 games, but he did have 8 penalty minutes. Jonathan Quick found himself 8 penalty minutes in only 27 games as well. So those are your tough. We're in a different era. It's not the same eras as the 90s. But
it's the spice you still want. You want a goalie that cares and is going to go hard, because if you see that, even if they're taking penalty minutes, they're getting mad. You should be fired up with them and for them. Like, you want to go, like, I would be like at the blue line, like, come on, like rallying it up. Even like Fleury's one too, like, because he's not an angry goalie, but he knows how to make others angry. And that is the instigation that I think he adds, that it's an element of fun and fire to a game too. It's the little things that he does.
Last one for me. Which RFA, which big RFA gets done within the next week?
None. No, it does. It all of a sudden feels like general managers are like clicking again. It's like, okay, everyone's back from the cottages. Let's ride. Uh-huh. So maybe we're going to see some movement. I'm sitting there still going like, Troy, hello. Mm-hmm.
Like Lucas Raymond, you're talking
Lucas
about?
Raymond, I think, Sider. Is done first.
Okay. Well, I mean, so who's the next? Are we going to see holdouts in camp? Are we going to see those guys done before? Like the, Jarvis, I think, still has to sign, and Raymond and those guys, like the big names, are they holding out?
I mean, I don't think so. I feel like Jarvis is going to be the first one to get done, actually. Out of that list, I'm going to say Jarvis gets done first. Because I don't think I could see right now the drama erupting if he didn't. And I know, like, I feel like the Canes don't want that. It's similar to like Dubas, like, oh, look, you let the nerd in charge, and this is what happened with Nylander. That, like, I feel like the Canes are not going to be in that position. They're just waiting to, I feel like, get their ducks in a row, because Jarvis is going to get paid and he deserves to get paid. If they gave him $8 million tomorrow, I'd be like, cool. If they gave him $9 million, I would even understand it. Like, that is a superstar player. You pay up. So I'm not worried about that. I wonder if anyone's waiting for the Line A dust to settle before making a decision on their RFAs, like how many teams are interested, because I still look at Carolina as a team that makes so much sense for him. So maybe that comes into the conversation, maybe not, but I feel like Jarvis is going to get done soon.
Who's your next victim on the court?
I need some practice. I'm rusty. I need some practice, because I can serve. It was everything else. And then it's like, as the longer you play, you're like, oh yeah, I remember how to do this, because I haven't played in like months. So I'm like, my racket is the next victim.
Speaking of spicy, I love that.
See, I want to talk to all your opponents to see what is the go-to move to get Shayna off her game or get her.
It doesn't take much. It's me. I get more mad at me. Like, I'm like, it's like Medvedev, how he's always yelling at himself.
Yeah.
And I'll smash a racket, but I have not yet smashed a racket. I'm not strong enough to smash a racket. So the day I get there is going to be the day I'm happy. Like, I will be happier the day I smash a racket versus just crushing someone and winning by such a great margin.
Well, she always have a bag full of rackets to be able to keep crushing them and then picking the same one out. That is the day you have like all the deals and you get all these rackets, then you can smash a couple of them. So that's good.
Shayna, thank you as always for bringing the passion. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Sabres Live concludes after this.
With more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Marty, we're cutting it close. One Bills Live is coming up next. We are on location on Monday at the Amherst Alumni Tournament.
Yeah, and I fear for the ones that have picked me to play, because I haven't picked up a single club all summer long. So 4 on Monday.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend, everyone. Hopefully I'll see some of you at Bush at Art Park tomorrow.
Yeah. trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.